always nice to understand qualitatively what's going on. Here's our normal diagram for the profit and loss of a call. Notice I'm now careful to say this is the future asset price. So this would be the asset price 1 year from now. But suppose I want to draw a line where I relate the profit and loss that could occur from a change in the current asset price. So the current asset price is 100. Suppose I want to show what the profit and loss will be right away. Suppose I right away immediately get a movement in the underlying asset price. Hardly any time has elapsed. What will happen to the option price? So I want to draw a line for that. It has to pass through here, the origin. At the origin, there's no profit and loss if the underlying asset price stays at 100 and doesn't change. The line ought to look something like this. And in fact, this is the line that you would get if you used something like the Black-Scholes formula. When the asset price goes way up, naturally the option price goes up. The first derivative of this line is positive. Whenever the asset price goes up, the option price goes up. And we know that already. We know that one of the six things that determines the price of an option is the underlying asset, and when it goes up, the option price goes up. So we've clearly captured that here. So notice that the second derivative of this line is positive. When the asset price goes way up, say it's way up here, then the option begins to look like the underlying asset itself. Now it becomes the case that the call option is way in the money. It's almost certainly going to be exercised. And now if the asset price goes up by a dollar, you as the holder of the option say, well, I'll probably get another dollar when I exercise my option. So knowing that, the option should be worth about another dollar more. So the asset price and the option price go up at about the same rate for high asset prices. When the asset price goes way up, if it now moves by a dollar, the option price should move by a dollar. So the slope of this blue line is about 1 at this point. On the other hand, down here, when the option is way out of the money, suppose you have an option where the strike price is 100 and the asset price is now 50. You may say to yourself, this option is dead. I'd almost give it away. In fact, I'm so upset I'll throw it in the wastebasket. It's basically not worth anything. So what happens is if the underlying asset price moves up by a dollar, it doesn't change the option price very much because you know that it really isn't going to matter much unless the underlying asset price can move all the way up to here. So the option price is not very responsive to the asset price in this region, and it's very responsive up here. So what that means is that we have a line that's always got a positive first derivative and is convex, or is has a positive second derivative. Now, suppose we wanted to replicate the option by using the underlying asset in cash. And suppose we're standing right here. You draw a tangent line to the line representing the current value of the option, and the slope of that tangent line is equal to the number of units of the underlying asset you want to hold in the replicating portfolio. Why is that? The slope is 0.371 at this point, right here. So if the underlying asset goes up a little bit in price, an approximation to how the option price should do would be, if the asset price moved up by a dollar, the option price would approximately move up by 73 cents. If the asset price went down by a dollar, the asset price would approximately move down by 73 cents. So if you want to replicate the option in this region, you want to hold about 0.73 units of the underlying asset in the replicating portfolio. You'll notice that in order to buy 0.731 shares, that share costs $100, so you have to have $73. But it turns out that the option's only $18.84. If you're going to replicate the option, you should only be investing $18.84. You have the option over here, which you could buy for $18.84. If you're going to manage a portfolio of the underlying asset in cash, and you want to put $18.84 in that, right? You have to put the same amount in. But you're supposed to buy $73 worth of the asset, not $18.84 of it. So where do you come up with the rest of the money? You borrow it. So what your replicating portfolio actually has is $73.10 invested in the underlying asset plus an amount of borrowing. We take $73.10 and we'd be borrowing some money, and that would be equal to $18.84. So we'd only put up $18.84, we'd borrow the rest to buy the $73 worth of the asset. What is the borrowing? We borrow $54.26. So the replicating portfolio involves, you want to buy that many dollars of the asset. Yep. The delta, we call this the delta. Delta is the slope of this line. When people in the options markets talk about delta, and they talk about it all the time, they're talking about the slope of this line. Delta is the most important number other than the option price or volatility that they pay attention to, because it tells them what their equivalent exposure is Owning this option at this point will give them a profit and loss that is similar to owning 0.73 units of the underlying asset. So a call is replicated by buying the underlying asset and funding that purchase mostly by borrowing. So a call can be thought of as a levered investment in the underlying asset, where the leverage keeps changing. Suppose the underlying asset goes way up. You want to continue to replicate the call, right? Well, you wouldn't just stay here at 0.73 shares, because that's not going to replicate it up here. Up here, the slope is almost 1. So as the asset price goes up, when you get up here, you want to have 1 unit of the underlying asset in your portfolio. So that means as the underlying asset price goes up, you gradually buy more and more of the underlying asset to replicate the call. And now I have a question for you. How do you fund that? How do you fund those additional purchases? Borrow more money. Yeah. Do not take it out of your pocket. Right? Why is that? If you bought a call option and the underlying asset price went up, would you need to take any money out of your pocket to get the payoff of the call option? No, you wouldn't. You only have to pay for it at the beginning. So if we're going to replicate it, we only take the $18.84 out of our pocket to start with, and then while we're replicating it, we borrow money. Now, of course, we're not cheating because we're planning to pay off our borrowing. So when we count at some point whether we're replicating the call, we always say to ourselves, if we were to liquidate our position and pay off everything we've borrowed, would we have the same amount of money in our replicating portfolio as the call option is worth? If we replicate the call exactly, that equality should hold at all times in the life of the call option. Deltas like duration and gamma, which we talk about here, will be like convexity for bonds. They're quite similar. What happens is in each situation, I think I might have mentioned this before, you look at the key element that influences the value of some security. In the case of a bond, it's the interest rate. In the case of, say, an asset, you might say it's the market portfolio. If the market portfolio goes up, you expect that asset to go up. So we use betas in a stock context. And if it's an option, the key variable is the underlying asset price. You ask yourself, well, what's the derivative? How sensitive is the value of the security to this key variable? And in this case, we call it delta. In the equity market, we call it beta. And in the bond market, we call it duration. And then there are second order levels, too. In the bond market, it's convexity. And here you'll see it'll be called gamma. The second derivative, that's the next most important variable that traders are interested in. And you see what happens on the downside. What happens on the downside? As the asset price falls, if we were to draw a little slope here, the slope is getting closer and closer to zero. So what does that say we should do? We should be selling out of the underlying asset. We started with 0.73 units. We sell out to the point where we actually have almost no units, which is what we want, right? Because we want a position that has virtually no sensitivity to the underlying asset price down here. The option is way out of the money. How can you do that? You don't hold the underlying asset, basically, down here. You never go short, because to go short would put you in a position where the underlying asset price fell, you'd start making money. Call options don't do that. When the underlying asset price falls, you don't start making money in call options. So you always want to be long, but the amount that you're long the underlying asset varies from almost zero when it's way out of the money to almost one when it's way in the money. Yes?
I guess, ask a related question. You could wind up, if the option goes way out of the money, you could wind up not actually borrowing, but actually lending.
No. What happens is this. As the asset price falls, you end up reducing your position. So that means you sell off some of the stock you've purchased. And now that's going to bring in money. What do you do with that money? Can you put that money in your pocket? No, you can't, because you can't do that with a call option, right? You never get any money in the middle, not until you exercise it or sell it. In this case, wait till maturity. So you can't put it in your pocket. What you can do is pay off the loan. So you pay off your borrowing. And if you're replicating the option correctly, what will happen is the amount of money you get will exactly retire the amount you've borrowed when you get to expiration. If the replication works exactly when you get to expiration, if asset price goes way up, what should you have in your replicating portfolio? You should own 1 unit of the asset. How much should you have borrowed to get that? The strike price. So at expiration, if you end up here, you should find your replicating portfolio consists of 1 unit of the underlying asset where you've borrowed an amount that's exactly equal to the strike price. And notice that that's exactly what the position that someone who has an option will get. He'll get the difference between S star, that's the position in the underlying asset, and the strike price. So the amount of money you should have in your portfolio at that point is equal to the strike price that you would have borrowed, including any interest. On the downside, Someone who owns a call option has nothing. So what should you have in your replicating portfolio? Nothing. You should own no shares, and all the proceeds you got from buying back the 0.73 shares should have been used to pay off your loan. Exactly. So you should also owe no money. That's if it works. If it doesn't work, then you won't find these two are the same. In real life, it doesn't work perfectly. And so the real question is, how close does it come? Another question this begs is, where did this delta come from of 0.73? It comes from some model that we haven't talked about yet. In this case, it came from the Black-Scholes model. That's how you get it precisely. But whatever model you're going to use, the qualitative discussion we've had would more or less be the case, and particularly when the underlying asset price rises, you're going to want to buy more of the underlying asset until you hold at most one unit, and the underlying asset price falls, you're going to want to sell out. And this will be true for, I think, any reasonable option pricing model.